Well, we were called to missions as kids. Usually weeks like this, the missionaries would come through and they'd dress up and they'd bring their slides and their weird stuff, stuff we'd never seen. So we thought we'd dress Indonesian. This is made in Indonesia. And probably in your closet are a lot of things made in Indonesia. And I bet more people in Indonesia dress like this now than in batik. But that said, this may be the time when God talks to you about your part of the mission of God. I love the word missions week or missions, because what it means is not something out there. It means God is on a mission to interact and reconcile the world with him. And we get to come alongside his mission with him.
Yeah, so as children, we were, every time the missionaries came to town, they were like our equivalent of the rock stars. And I just really enjoyed that. Those slideshows and all the different things, that was so cool. And I didn't realize this, but Rosemary actually kind of consented to date me and all that because she knew that I had a call to missions. The thing is, here's how I proposed to her, and I'm not necessarily recommending this, but it worked. We're 36 years later, it worked. So I actually asked her, would you go to Red China with me? And her response was...
Wow, that's so romantic. No, that was internal. And what I actually said was equally romantic. Sure.
So, from there we got married, went to Northwest, it was college then, now Northwest University, and everything was focused on getting to the mission field as quickly as possible, and life took, not a detour as such, but it worked out differently than we had thought it would. We ended up working in church work for about 5 years, and I'm now in my 29th year of teaching at Northwest. Now, we have gotten over to Southeast Asia. We teach in Singapore, Indonesia, and Malaysia every other year and do other things the other years and so on. But, for a long period of time, that was basically how our call to missions was being expressed.
And I was home raising the kids while he was teaching. And I thought, you know what, I feel kind of ripped off. Because as a pastor's wife, you kind of have some facial recognition, right? And people know you're in ministry with your husband. As a teacher's wife, and God told me something, just dropped it deep into my heart. I've been teaching piano since I was 13. And people would come in my door, and God would say, look who I'm bringing. I'm bringing Seattle New Agers. I'm bringing people who doubt and seek. I'm bringing Hindus, Buddhists, Muslims in your door, and they're paying you. Just be on my mission with me. That's all I'm asking you to do. And you know what? That was enough. That just settled my heart down. And we actually did make it to China about 5 or 6 years ago on a Sabbath week while we were teaching. We had a week off and we went to Beijing. And we're sitting in church and we watched this. We found a church right across from our hotel. Just thought we'd pop in on a Sunday morning. And there were people being baptized that Sunday.
113 people baptized that Sunday morning. And the ratio is interesting. 89 women, 24 men. Rosemary pointed out to me, she was working on her degree in missions right at that time, pointed out to me that basically that meant that a lot of those women were deciding to be single, because if they were not getting married to somebody who is a Christian, or if they were going to marry somebody who's a Christian, well, the ratio wasn't terrifically favorable.
And I was just thinking, how much more is it going to cost them to get baptized than it cost me? And God said, you know what? Everybody who follows me lays their life down. So anyway, I asked him, how are you feeling about this? And he is so excited.
I've got tears streaming down my face. I'm just thrilled right down to my socks. And so we had not ended up in missions as I thought we would, but this is expressing what God has called us to do.
And later he asked me, how are you feeling? I'm like, I am so ticked. I'm too old to learn Mandarin. And I thought we were going to China. But, even in that, God was just laying to rest a dream and saying, you know what? What you're doing in the day is enough. This is what I called you to do. And just be faithful.
And so about a year ago, end of March, something happened that changed everything for us.
I'm having coffee with my friend, And just as we're about to leave, she says, "Oh, got to ask you something. An email came across my desk, and the missionaries in Indonesia are looking for someone to plant a church. And what they're looking for is an older couple, educated, who can come and just start a church in a place where we've been praying for 15 years. What do you think?" And I'm like, "Ha, I'm in." And she says, "Well, ask your husband." Well, if you've been married a long time, you don't necessarily go about it straightforwardly. So I knew that her husband was meeting my husband on Thursday, and I just said, "You know what, how about your husband asks my husband?"
Okay, for all the younger married couples, you know, you want to shut your ears here because you don't want to learn all these techniques too early, you know. Anyway, so Thursday, I'm meeting with Mel, and we're talking about video cameras and computers and theology. And he says, "Oh, and by the way, we've got this opportunity." And initially, the call was actually to a city of about 800,000 with a big university, multiple universities, but one really big one. And he says, "Are you interested?" And I, you know, it just struck me right away, yes. And I didn't know that they'd had this conversation, that his wife and my wife had this conversation, you know, on the Monday. I said, "But we have to ask Rosemary what she thinks." And so we were calling her down. I don't know that she's leaning over the balcony listening in, you know. But she comes down and...
he says, "What do you think? Doesn't this sound great?" And you know what? My heart just stopped. I thought, this is it? We get to go full time? And you know what? We haven't looked back. It was like that night, we just looked at each other and went like, "Are you sure?" And I said, "I'm really sure. Are you sure?"
"Yeah, I am absolutely sure." And we had a conversation about this. You know, there's a story in the Bible about a guy called Gideon, who is, in many people's vocabulary, including in mine, not a hero of the faith. He does some things that are really amazing, but one of the things he does is he tests God twice. He does this thing with laying out the fleece of a sheep and asks God to prove that God is, you know, with him by having it be wet when the ground is dry and dry when the ground is wet and so on. And so for me, that's kind of, okay, Gideon, you're not the person I think of when I think of heroes of the faith.
On the other hand, I'm thinking this is a guy in a period of Israel's time or history where if you want to eat, you got to hide your grain and grind it in secret. And God says to him, "I want you to take an army and conquer these people who are oppressing you." So he calls out and gets the army together, and then he says, "I got to be really sure before I make orphans and widows in a culture with no welfare system. I got to know God is in this thing." So he asked God, "You know what? Remind me. You're going to be there and you're going to be enough."
Well, okay, so you get to pick whether he's a man of faith or not. And so we have interesting conversations. But in any case, one of the things we did decide is we were not going to, like, set out tests for God. Or, you know, this just sounded right. I mean, it would have been logical for us to go to, like, Austria, Switzerland, or Germany, because both of us are fluent in German. But instead, God is calling us somewhere where we don't know the language.
But it's easy. Apparently, Bahasa Indonesia is one of the two easiest languages. Swahili's the other. That's the other place we thought we might go, is Africa. So we're not going to the easiest language. We're going to the second easiest language to acquire. And I got to tell you, that's a confirmation for my old heart. My pastor came up in the foyer after we told him, and he says, "You know what, I got to ask you an awkward question." So Waldemar was standing nearby, and we're like, "Come here, the pastor wants to ask us an awkward question." And you know what he said to us?
"Why should we send old people? If we send young missionaries, they have like an extra 20, 30, 40 years, you know, why shouldn't we send them, invest our money in them?" So Rosemary contacted the missionaries we're working with, and...
and they said, "You got three advantages. Gray hair stands out in our culture because there aren't a lot of old people. Most people are young. And when an older person says, 'Come on, you have to come,' there's a respect that you would not have had 20 or 30 years ago just by being old and alive."
Cool.
And then they said the second thing is education. And Waldemar got his PhD. I saw this doctorate pop up online and God said, "Go." And I'm like, okay, well, we teach overseas. Well, I'll go. So 3 weeks later, I was sitting in class. I graduated with the same question on my lips and on everybody else's lips. What are you doing this for? And the same answer, I don't know. God said go, so there I went. And they went like, but you're finished. Are you going to look for a teaching job? No, I don't think so. Are you going to work at the universe? I don't think so. I had no idea. And God said, take a year off. Something's coming after that. And in March, when this call came, God said, well, now you know why. And it was just, well, yeah, I'm glad it's paid for. I don't have to ask anybody's permission and the high energy that it takes to finish that thing behind me.
So, you know, okay, we didn't do the laying out of the fleece thing, but there were so many interesting things that happened. For instance, one of the things, I'd love to tell you all the stories that kind of surrounded this, but we ended up moving into our basement. Our kids moved in upstairs because their lease was running out and was getting more expensive, yada, yada, yada. And this way was a way we could think of keeping our house going and all that kind of thing. And so we're looking for some furniture for it. It used to be storage up to here, and now it's a basement flat. And Rosemary found a table on Craigslist, and we're going out to pick it up. It's an IKEA side table, and we walk in and see this big white dude and a shorter Asian lady. And so Rosemary asked,
so, you know, I said, we're Canadian, and we have this question we ask everybody we meet. And if it's awkward for you to answer, just don't answer, you know. We're open to answer or no answer. And I said, we ask, where are you from? And we don't mean like Chicago or Dallas or somewhere like that. We mean, where are your people from? And I said, your wife, is she from here? And he says, oh, no, she's from Indonesia. I'm a UW anthropology prof. And, you know, what are you guys doing behind this table? And we said, we're going to Indonesia. And he says, oh, we're there in March. When are you going? He's going this March, this month. He said, let's get in touch. When we're over there, we're there for 5 months. When you arrive, come talk to us. I met my wife doing my PhD in Indonesia.
And so we were talking a little bit, and he says, where are you going? We said, Bandung. And her sister is in Bandung studying. You know, so we had never heard of this city. Now, the initial call was to a city of 800,000, where we're actually going, and the missionaries have been praying for this city for 15 years now for the right couple to come along. Bandung is, it's like a 1.5 hour drive if the traffic is perfect, 4 hours normally from Jakarta. It's a city of 5 to 8 million people nestled in among active volcanoes. And it's got 6+ universities of the UW class, that kind of size. So it's a huge place for study. It's the center of the textile industry for Indonesia. And so, you know, they've been waiting for the right people to come along. We've never heard of the city of Bandung. We now hear about it wherever we go. I get Rosemary flowers. The lady behind the flower counter asks some questions about where we've been. And turns out she is from Bandung. Yeah, you know, our daughter gets food at a food truck in Austin, Texas. And the lady behind the counter there is from, yeah, never heard of the place before. God has a sense of humor, and he is making it clear. He knows where we're going, who he's sending there, and he's preparing the place for us.
So we answered the call of God as children and said yes. And people say to us, what makes this big yes possible? Leaving the kids, leaving our parents. What makes it possible to just pick up and say, the rest of our life, as far as we know, will be somewhere else? And you know what it is? It's the 100 yeses along the way. It's the times that you say yes to God when you talk to your neighbor. It's a time that you get up and you say, I will be cheerful today. I'll offer a sacrifice of praise if I have to. Because I'm not feeling like being a very good Christian today. It's the times when you lay down your life and you just say yes in the ordinary stuff. Then when God calls you to do something that everybody's going like, what are you thinking? You just go like, one more yes.
So we're going to look at a passage together. It's not one of the usual passages that you read from the Bible and think, wow, this is a great sermon topic. It's actually the stuff that happens in between things happening, if you will. But you know, those transition points of life are very, very significant. We're going to talk about God's leading during transition, how you step out in faith, how God provides for you in those situations. And we're looking at a very special person.
Do you remember the guy named Saul who had his life all together? He loved God. In fact, it says he was zealous. He just, whatever God, whatever you want. He was also pretty astute and educated and kind of climbing the political and the religious ladder. He had a good mentor in Jerusalem, which was the center of Jewish life. And then he met Jesus. And Jesus knocked him back kind of on the bottom, so he had to disappear for a couple of years. But, you know, all that training, that writing, that rabbinic education, many of the books in the New Testament were written by this guy. Without that former life, there's no way he could have accomplished what God was repurposing him to do. So it may not have appeared to be his path early on, but ultimately, we know him as Paul.
And so we're going to look at a passage together. I'll give you some time to find this in your e-text or in your literal physical Bible. Acts chapter 20, verse 36 is where we'll start. And we'll read about 10, 11 verses. We're looking at a passage that talks about meeting and leaving and also about how the church interacts with the weary traveler and assists in doing what God has called us to do. So starting with Acts 20, verse 36.
When Paul had finished speaking, he knelt down with all of them and prayed. They all wept as they embraced him and kissed him. What grieved them most was a statement that they would never see his face again. Then they accompanied him to the ship.
After we had torn ourselves away from them, we put out to sea and sailed straight to Kos. The next day we went to Rhodes and from there to Patara. We found a ship crossing over to Phoenicia, went on board, and set sail. After sighting Cyprus and passing to the south of it, we sailed on to Syria.
We landed at Tyre, where our ship was to unload its cargo. We sought out the disciples there and stayed with them 7 days. Through the Spirit, they urged Paul not to go on to Jerusalem. When it was time to leave, we left and continued on our way. All of them, including wives and children, accompanied us out of the city, and there on the beach, we knelt to pray.
After saying goodbye to each other, we went on aboard the ship, and they returned home. We continued our voyage from Tyre and landed at Ptolemais, where we greeted the brothers and sisters and stayed with them for a day. Leaving the next day, we reached Caesarea and stayed at the house of Philip the Evangelist, one of the seven. So we started with this pretty emotional description of community life as well as of departure. Now, again, this is the same guy who used to hunt Christians, right? And if you were a Christian, the news that you weren't going to see this guy called Saul was really good news. That was a good day, not seeing Saul. Now, the idea that Saul is leaving and we're not going to see his face again brings them to tears. And life is full of departures. It's a necessary part of living. Your kids grow up. They leave home. They get married. They form a new unit, and they're now less attached than they were before. It's a part of the way things work. We are going to leave our kids in June. The cool thing is there's this thing called FaceTime and Skype and Viber and Google Hangouts and stuff like that. And so we'll still be able to see them. Back then, saying goodbye to somebody in this kind of a situation is kind of like being at a deathbed. You're probably not going to see this person again, and in fact, that's the language that's used there. But you know, leaving is important. I mean, part of the whole forming of a new family unit is leaving and cleaving, right? Jesus says to his disciples, this is in John 14, verse 28, "If you loved me, you would be glad that I'm going to the Father." In other words, if you love me, you're going to let me go. And sometimes that's a part of what love is. It expresses itself by letting people leave.
So what happens when God shakes up your world? Either when you say goodbye to someone because you're leaving, or they're leaving and you have to let them go. Did you ever dream what your life would be like? And then have you been tossed about by these transitions? We kind of chuckle when kids come out of Northwest U and they have a degree in communications, and years later we see them doing something like completely different. And they're like, well, I think my degree was useful. It is, because every part of what you become and who you are is important to God. But sometimes everything that you think about the future changes. Here Paul is traveling through the cities on the coast and getting help from people that he used to hunt and kill. These weary travelers are staying with the church. And remember, Paul never traveled by himself. He had a team that traveled with him.
I think there are four or five actually mentioned earlier in the chapter, so at least that many.
So they're landing on the shore on someone's doorstep and using up beds, using up food, and hanging out. So what would happen if somebody came up to you this afternoon and said, hey, you know what, we're in town till Saturday, can you put us up?
Yeah, we won't do that.
But just imagine, this is what they're doing. They're coming in and finding relief by hanging out with people on whose shore they've landed.
You know, one of the things that really fascinates me about this passage is the historical detail. This guy called Luke, who's writing this, is known as a good historian. And he gives us detail that's completely unnecessary, if you will, and yet it is really vital to me as a student of God's Word. How do fairy tales start? Traditional opening of a fairy tale. Once upon a time, and how do they end? Happily ever after. Really indeterminate. I mean, you could fit just about anything in between, and that's, you know, how you fabricate a fairy tale. Well, this isn't fabricated. There's a lot of detail in here that enables anybody to go back and trace it. You know, the people who would have received this story first from Luke and so on, they could go back to these various cities and say, oh, did they stay with you? Yeah. How long did they stay there? Yeah, you can confirm the information. The Bible really is a trustworthy book. I love that about it. There's something else that goes on, though, in this little chunk of that we read. You don't always know where God's going to take you. Now, we're told that somebody told them through the Spirit, don't go, this is going to happen to you. And Paul says, yeah, I know it's going to happen, I still have to go. How do we know when God is leading us? I do tell my students here as a bit of a tip for you, when God is leading you, he's going to confirm it in your heart first. When the little old granny comes to you and says, God told me you're supposed to marry my granddaughter, you know. Well, usually he'll have given you a clue that this might be happening first, you know. It's not going to just come out of the blue. And so for Rosemary and myself, although this really came out of the blue in a sense, for her, she heard it and it was yes. For me, I heard it, it was yes. And then since then, God has just stacked up all these yeses. And we've seen that God has repurposed what he's done in our lives up to now and is bringing us to this point.
So how about you? What dreams have you dreamed? Where have you been? What education have you had or not had? What family did you grow up in or not grow up in? What jobs have you held or wished that you held? This is all part of the journey that God has you on. And I'll tell you, God is pleased with you. I often run into people, and Waldemar the same, who say, oh, if I could only. You know what? You don't wish that you could play piano like me or the gal who was up here. While you guys were fooling around with your friends, we were sitting on that bench practicing. You don't want to be anybody else. My mom has a funny saying. She says, you look in anybody else's window, and it's not as golden as you think, because the cross that Jesus puts on our back is shaped for our back. And she told me, don't you take anybody's cross on you. You carry the cross, and you live the life that God made you for. And we'd encourage you to do that. Paul kept going. He was sure that his end was going to be kind of ugly. Jerusalem was not going to be a fun place, but he also knew there was that winch, the call of God pulling him forward to the good and the bad and to do what was in the day.
And you know, if you're headed towards a destination, for any, they were sailing back then, they didn't have motorboats. And you know, if you're headed into the wind on a sail ship, the only way to get there, it's called tacking. You zig and zag your way to the destination. And so sometimes life has these zigs and zags. But God knows precisely where he's taking you, and there is not a single thing that's going to happen to you that is lost in God's plans. He knows precisely how he's going to put all those different pieces together and repurpose them so that ultimately the thing that is brought out is exactly the right thing for you and is also what God has called you to do.
God invites us to explore the world. You know, sometimes we think of Christianity as all the things that we can't do. You're not allowed to do this, you're not allowed to do this, you're not allowed to do this. But you know what? As I've studied world religions, I found that there's an interesting core philosophy. In Buddhism, they talk about nirvana, for instance. Well, nirvana isn't this golden glow. What it is you go around, you come around, and you go around, you go, and finally you get to wink out. You don't have to do it anymore. That's the hope of nirvana. What did Jesus say? I've come to give you life and that more abundantly. You know, it's like live your morning, live your noon, live your night. Come fully alive and be everything that God designed you to be. And I'll tell you, it's easier to have rules and religious rituals that you can just slot into and go like, I'm going to do this, this, and this, and God better be pleased with me and give me good stuff. It's a lot harder to have that relationship where you wake up in the morning and you go like, God, I'm open. Whatever happens in this day, healthy or sick, rich or poor, here I am, I'm showing up, and I'm coming alongside what you're doing. You know, that's an exciting way. And then when you go to bed at night, just go like, God, it was you and me. I failed in this. I did this well. You know, just to celebrate. My heart is broken, or my heart is joyful to go into the night with God. What a wonderful thing to do. And you know, healthy society and community depends not only on our interaction with God, but on our interaction with others. In Scripture, you always see two things. You see giving and taking. Paul is this increasingly well-known evangelist who comes in and tells people good news about Jesus. But these people on the shore have something to give him. He needs care. He needs their hospitality. On the other hand, they're not just giving. They're also taking what Paul has to offer. So there's this reciprocation, giving and taking. And in a healthy community, you have to do both. You can't just volunteer until you're dead. You have to take in what people offer you. And I'll tell you, as Calvary reaches out to Seattle and across the world, it's not you guys just laying your life on them, them being other people. Whoever lands on your shore has something to offer you, and your hands and your heart has to be open to give and to take. That's the gift of a community centered around the love of God.
But there's also this whole process of leaving. It's going to be tough to leave Calvary. I mean, I'm not here every Sunday, but I've had the privilege of teaching a number of times here, and this is one of my favorite places to teach. I meet with a group of folks who love to study the Bible, and it is a blast. I mean, for 28 plus years now, I've gotten to do what I think is the most fun in the world, and that is think about God and then talk about him with friends. And, you know, we're leaving that behind. We're leaving our grandchildren and children behind and people like you and my students at Northwest. But, you know, this is what God has called us to do. And so we're headed to the next grand adventure with God.
So what's God offering us today? How will he meet the deepest needs of our heart in community? We want meaning and significance. And that comes not from trying to be somebody else, and going, wow, that person gets to do something cool. I actually worked at Northwest for 5.5 years, and you know why? It was to support missionaries. I figured that when my boss paid me for 20 hours, and then I was full-time for 40 hours, he was paying me for my life. So the missionary that I gave $1,000 to got this amount, this many hours of my week. Actually, that was probably my whole week, right? And the person who got $25 was getting this much time of my life. I was laying my life on their life. with something called a salary, which was what my boss gave me in exchange for my life.
And God has called us to exchange life for life. We're going to a place, Bandung, I've mentioned it already, 5 to 8 million people. Well, Indonesia is 83% Muslim, but this area, the main people group, 96 to 98% Muslim. And in that people group, 1/20 of 1% is Christian. So if I were to take you to CenturyLink Stadium on a dark, moonless night, and it was packed to the rafters, we're cheering on Go Seahawks or whatever, okay? 67,000 people. In that stadium, there would be a total of 34 candles. That's it. And that would be the people who know Jesus Christ. And of the rest of the people in there, most of them can't even see that there are candles, leave alone see something by the light of the candle. That's what God has called us to. And we've got a cool job. We get to go and invite people into relationship with God. Invite them to get to know. Here's another option for you to think about. This is a view of reality that we believe is the correct one, and you need to know about it and think about this. Now, I'm a teacher, and we love to, you know, I'm not going to make you do an exam or anything like that, but I'd love to hear from you what God has said through Paul's story or through our story. Is there something that kind of stuck out to you? Just let us know what you heard.
Obedience.
It's not over. If you've got gray hair, that doesn't mean it's time to think about retirement. God can repurpose you, and you know, some of the things you're doing, you can find even more significance. Yeah, absolutely. Growth?
Trust. That was the verse I was reading. I was in a personal retreat this week, and it says, God keeps in perfect peace the person whose trust is in God. And this isn't an easy thing for us. You know, some days I wake up and I think, oh man, what are we thinking? You know, it's not like you get on a magic missionary airplane and suddenly, you know, you're a normal person in Seattle and you get on the airplane and you go to the other side and all of a sudden, wah, missionary. It's not like that. The people who climb on this side get off that side. And the call that we have here in Seattle to join God's mission is the call that we'll be doing over there. So, you know what? If you're young, pour yourself into the mission of God. And remember, all along the way, God will be repurposing. And instead of retirement, I always think of it as retreading. Right? I mean, God is doing in your day what you need to trust Him for. And that may not look the same all the time.
Thank you so much. It's been incredible spending this time with you, and we appreciate the trust of the pastors and the staff here, and we love you guys. We covet your prayers and your support, and thank you.